Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Welcome back, folks. The Saints season is now over. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, joins us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, we've made it. We've gotten here. 18 weeks
We are here. The Saints end up being, 5-12, excuse me, losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 10-7. They go to the playoffs. I have to say, though, I watched the entire game. I was proud of their effort. I really was. I thought they were throwing bodies around. Maybe the stats, and there were some great stats in the game for them. But the quarterback for the Buccaneers just played an incredible game. He seemed to be, every break went his way for the most part.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield's playing really well. The frustration with the Saints defense, and it's been this way for a while, especially against Baker, it seems, whenever he wants to scramble, he can scramble. He can go wherever he wants. It's never a situation where that's ever a problem for him. But, no, I mean, they played really well in the first half of that game. It's kind of been the story of the season. You've been able to put really strong halves together. You've not been able to put really strong, complete games together. It's back-to-back weeks that Spencer Rattler, I thought, played really well in the first half. He played really well in the first half against the Raiders. He played really well in the first half against the Bucs. You just weren't able to sustain that, really. The Bucs played kind of like a more desperate team in the second half of that game, and they were. I mean, they're playing for a playoff berth. The Saints are kind of playing for pride. But man, they put a scare into them. There's no doubt about that. The fans in that stadium were getting restless. They were booing multiple times in the first half. They went off the field down 10 at halftime, thinking, man, we're going to blow this. But the Saints just have too many holes at this point. But it also, it's a situation where the Saints couldn't hurt their draft pick by winning, but by losing, they actually did end up moving up a spot in the draft. So, probably best case scenario, you put some good stuff on tape, but you didn't hurt your draft stock. So now we're just going to be sitting here talking about head coaches, scouting, draft picks, all that good stuff.
Well, before we talk about that, I want to thank you for joining me week in, week out. I really enjoy your commentary. I really enjoy the way that you break down a game. And I really enjoy, what the role that you play with our overall team, with Deuce and Mike Haas and covering the sideline and all of our digital content that's out there. And just want to say congratulations to you on a job well done for this year. It's a lot easier, I guess, to do a lot of this. And I think you would agree when things are going really good, right? You're winning and everything is hunky-dory. And, it's kind of a celebration week in, week out. We hadn't had that in a little while. So hopefully we don't get used to what we're having this year.
It's definitely a lot more fun, right? The conversations are more fun. You get, and honestly for me, it's like I just get better. The content is better. People are more willing to talk. The locker room is more engaging. When things are going badly, it's really kind of dreary and dull, and all the questions end up being, well, why aren't things better? And that's not fun for anybody. But I'm never going to be you know, I have a dream job, right? Like, I'm never going to be, you know, super negative about getting to stand on the sideline and watch an NFL game. So, you know, I think that might kind of come into my commentary a little bit, which is how mad can I actually be when I'm in such a fortunate situation? But I do appreciate what you're saying there. And it is interesting because you don't want to, you know, it's easy to look at a season like this and say, like, well, there's no way this can ever get better. I think, and what Darren Rizzi talked about yesterday, I think is accurate. Like, you know, if every time things go badly, you kind of tear everything out by the root and start from scratch, you're just going to be right back here in a few years. Teams do that all the time. You kind of have to look at the whole picture, take the positives, build on the positives, erase the negatives, and replace what needs to be replaced. And that doesn't happen if you start from scratch every year. And so that's kind of how I try to approach things. Like, okay, how can you actually improve things, not just be angry about the entire picture all the time?
When you have mediocrity as a result of instability, right, in the way that you're managing a team and things like that, that's where you get into a point where it gets really difficult to change the culture. The Saints, for the most part, from a management perspective, I don't think that there's been that degree of instability. We may not agree with all the decisions that they've made, but I don't think that they're flying by the seat of their pants.
No, and I think that's a strength of this team. I know it frustrates people at times, but generally speaking, you look around the NFL, the teams with stability tend to be the more consistently successful teams. I mean, you look at the teams that replace the entire picture every year. You look at teams like the Panthers and the Giants and the Jets, and it's like those aren't, you know, that's kind of cathartic at times, right? Like, it's fans are angry, they're upset, and they want everyone to get fired, and you fire everyone. They're like, great, yay, cheer. But then you look back 2 years later, and you're right back where you are. Like, those aren't the model franchises. I don't want to model my franchise after the Jaguars. I want to model my franchise after the Steelers, right? You know, those are the Ravens. Like, those are the teams that are successful, and those are the teams that aren't firing their entire staff and starting from scratch after every season that doesn't go well. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll see. This is an important offseason for this team in that sense, because you can say that up to a certain point, right? Like, you can say that until you go through two or three head coaching cycles and things don't improve, things don't get back to the baseline that you've set. And that's where you are right now. You know, you made the decision to try to continue the Sean Payton culture. It didn't really work. And now you're going to reset. So, you know, I think this is going to be an offseason that makes or breaks a lot of these, you know, long-term ideals that this franchise is based on.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks. Plus, you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
It's, how do I ask this question? So when we look at, like, today's player as opposed to 10 years ago, I guess for you, do you see marked differences? I mean, you know, the young men that are coming out of college today, kind of the way they view the world as opposed to how it was 10 years ago. I know when I was sheriff and managing millennials and Gen Xers, Gen Yers, you know, that it's not that they're, you know, lazy, this, that, or otherwise. They just kind of view the world differently. Your training has to change. The management style kind of has to change in order to extract the most that you can out of folks. Do you see that in football?
Well, I do have to be honest, at the risk of dating myself, I was not covering the NFL 10 years ago, so it's tough for me to make that comparison. But, you know, I do think that's when you look at the players that were here for 10 years ago. You look at Cam Jordan, you look at DeMario Davis, obviously not here, but he was in the NFL 10 years ago. Tyrann Mathieu has been around forever. I do think that that is something you run into, where veteran players who have found a lot of success in the NFL will sometimes see some of the work ethic that comes in and that doesn't fly. And, you know, I think part of it is, hey, you know, you need those tone setters to kind of foster that image and foster that work ethic. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of people will complain, hey, the Saints defense is too old, the Saints are relying too much on veteran players. I think they see the value in that maturity and that experience because they wanted to bring along the younger players. Because I do think when you kind of, you know, it is kind of a weird culture that's coming out of college right now. And I don't know if every NFL team is capable of managing that the way that they might have been previously, where these guys are coming out of college, they're already affluent. They already have this massive brand that, you know, they're bringing to you. And then they have
money
to kind of settle into, right, exactly. And then they have to settle into a team culture where they're at the bottom of the totem pole. And that's not always an easy thing to navigate. So, you know, I don't think it's going to get any easier. And we'll have to see. Like, you talk about a guy like Shedeur Sanders, might be the number one pick in the draft. He's going to have a bigger following than a lot of the players that have been on this team, or whatever team he lands on, who have been in the NFL for years. And that's got to be strange. And we'll see how that goes. But it's tough for me to sit here and say, oh, 10 years ago it was like this, because I wasn't here, right, 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to happen. I mean, and I got to imagine it's going to be a consideration for whoever the next coach is going to be, right? I know there's been a lot of talk about why somebody would want to come here. If I were looking for employment, I would look for stability first. And I think that you kind of have that here in the management of this organization. And again, I know a lot of people don't agree with it, but if nothing else, it's stable.
Yeah, I mean, I think people a lot of times look at coaching searches and look at hirings and firings as just kind of like a button you press, a piece you move on a chessboard. When in reality, and, you know, Clint Kubiak talked about this the other day, it's like, you know, he's been in this situation before. He was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings on Mike Zimmer's staff. Year one, Mike Zimmer gets fired. He, you know, they clean house. He's got to go find a new job, ends up in Denver, ends up in San Francisco, ends up in New Orleans. You know, these guys have families. These aren't just moves they make flippantly. Like, they have to consider, okay, you know, well, am I going to live there? Is this going to be a long-term thing? You know, so that does matter. It does matter to a lot of these coaches. And that's why, you know, when coaches get hired, you don't see a lot of coaches get fired in years one or two. It's a much bigger decision than I think a lot of people realize. And when you do, you know, when you're the Panthers, and you have this track record of firing coaches flippantly, and your owner is so erratic, and you have to answer for that, it does make it difficult to hire a head coach. Dave Canales went there and got this insane buyout, which is basically the NFL equivalent of hazard pay, because no one wants that job. So, no, I mean, I think stability in the organization is important, and it's important when you're trying to sell your organization to your top candidate, because you don't want to be a team that ends up on your third, fourth, or fifth candidate. And we'll see how that goes for the Saints because, you know, they're one of five teams right now who will be battling for whoever these top candidates are. We've already seen, you know, they've requested interviews with a handful of guys. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think a lot of the guys that they're interested in are in the playoffs. So I gotta imagine that's going to delay this process. I know they would probably love to have an accelerated timeline, but I'm not sure that's going to be reality. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you actually can't do in-person interviews with anyone who's under contract until January 20th. All you can do right now for people who, other than say like a Mike Vrabel, who's actually out of the NFL right now, all you can do right now are virtual interviews. Like a guy like Aaron Glenn is in the playoffs. You could technically interview him this week because the Lions have a bye. So there are some weird kind of caveats. But no, I mean, I think it's the idea that you're going to rush through this and try to beat other people to the table. Any head coach with options is going to go through all of his options, right? No one's going to cut themselves off early just because another team got to them early. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to cast a wide net. The Saints are not going to rush this decision. It's way too important of a decision to rush through. And that's going to frustrate some people because there are going to be coaches hired. prior to the Saints hiring a coach. It's inevitable. It's just how they operate. They do not shortchange themselves on the process. Darren Rizzi is very much going to be a significant part of that conversation. He will be a legitimate candidate. You know, he admits that this team needs to make changes, but he doesn't see himself as an example of status quo. He sees himself as an example of someone who is capable of making the important changes up and down the line. So now it's going to be a long, protracted process. It's going to be a lot of opinions, a lot of conversations. But at the end of the day, the important thing is getting it right. The Saints have always been an organization that prioritizes getting it right over getting it done quickly, and that's what we're going to have again.
We have, I was looking at something, and I don't totally understand it, but I was looking at a summary of salary cap space, and I know there's a lot that goes into this, and the Saints happen to be, according to this chart, in dead last, at negative $66 million, and nobody else is even really close to that, quite frankly. I think the Cleveland Browns are second worst at negative $24 million. What does that mean, and how much of a limitation does that put on them going into this into the draft?
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack, right? Probably more than we can get into here. But you know, the interesting thing is that's actually the best situation they've been in for a while in terms of, you know, I think COVID was the worst, the COVID year, because the salary cap actually went down. So they ended up like $110 million over the salary cap, and that was very difficult for them to clear because they have these things planned out, right? They have their contracts kind of set up in cycles, so they know they always have enough restructure potential to get cap compliant, to clear however much space they need to make those moves. And the issue they're running into now is it's much easier to commit to that kind of long-term plan when you're winning games, when you're going to the postseason, when you're a consistently competitive franchise. It's a lot tougher to sell when you are 5-12, and you have to answer the question, does it make sense to pay your quarterback $40 million when you seem to be a lot further away from contention than that would indicate, right? And so, mm-hmm. You know, how do you get to cap compliance? Well, you restructure the big contracts on your ledger. One of those, for example, Derek Carr, right? So you need to clear $66 million. You can restructure Derek Carr's deal and clear $30 million of that, so you're halfway there already. But that ties you to Derek for more years, and you're pushing that cap hit down the line. And does that necessarily make sense under the current circumstances? Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, it was a lot easier to sell when you're talking about Drew Brees and you're winning 12 games every year. If you don't do that, if you kind of eat that cap hit, then you have to restructure some other guys, a Tyrann Mathieu, a Cam Jordan, a Mario Davis. And that just commits you to some older players down the line. So, you know, it is limiting, but it's more limiting in the sense that I think this team is trying to commit to a rebuild of sorts. They're trying to get closer to cap compliance. So, you know, it's what people want, right? They want that rebuild. They want them to lean into it a little bit, but that leads to, you know, down seasons. That leads to not having the depth to survive injuries. It leads to, you know, some consistent poor play. And, you know, it's tough. I think what they should be doing is prioritizing draft picks and draft assets and making sure you're getting enough bites at the apple there. Because in order to get back to the cap situation that you need, you're going to have to get contributions from young players. You're going to have more drafts like 2006, 2017, or at least closer to that, so that you can survive eating more of these cap hits and not having to restructure every contract. I know that's a long explanation, but it is a very convoluted process the Saints have found themselves in.
Nah, I loved it. Thank you. I understand more about it now than I ever did. And although the Saints were 5-12, Jeff Nowak, you were 17-0, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us as always, and have a great week and happy new year.
Sounds good, Newell. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Brandy Bynum, the acting unit chief of the Department of Homeland Security in the Center for Countering Human Trafficking. When we return, stay with us.